Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal industry. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. And I think it probably won't be Friday when we release this, but it's Friday now. And I think everybody on this call right now is ready for the weekend. So, Marlene, you're driving somewhere.
I am driving somewhere to a volleyball tournament. I'll just say, I mean, it's been a week today. It really has. Paraphrasing Harry Chapin, it's been a week today.
Yeah. I just found out last night that I also have to drive up to Oklahoma. So as soon as we're done here, I got to go jump in the van and head on up there. So luckily, I think all the storms have moved out. So yay. Well, this week we bring back someone, a good friend of ours, Nicole Braddock, who is the CEO of Theory and Principle, and again, prior guest on the show. So, Nicole, welcome back to the Geek in Review.
Thank you. I am not driving to Oklahoma. That would take a really long time.
You're missing out. You're missing out.
It's a true treat, really.
It is.
So, Nicole, it's been a couple years since you and Ryan McLeod were on the podcast to discuss Map Engine. I know there have been some changes. And for those who don't know Map Engine, can you tell us about what it is and some of its uses?
Sure. Yeah. Map Engine is a product that we built in collaboration with Sente Advisors, which is Ryan McLeod's company. And it's a product that we built to allow firms to create map visualizations of their multi-jurisdictional data. So if you wanted to show the differences between regulations across 50 states or across countries in Europe or globally, this product allows you to really easily, it's stupid how simple it is, but it allows you to really easily create that visualization and then be able to share it either sort of in your intranet if you wanted to have it for internal KM purposes, or on your website if you wanted to have it for sort of marketing purposes, or share directly with your clients.
Well, actually, the thing that sold me was that you said how stupid it
was. Stupid easy, yes.
Yeah, yep. Stupid easy. Yeah. That's kind of my threshold right there. It's just needs to be stupid easy. So. Well, what are just a couple of examples of what clients are doing with the product?
Yeah, so a lot of our clients are using it for creating client-facing products for things their clients are asking them to track for them. You know, during COVID, for example, clients are asking them to track regulations regarding different things they need to track for their business. We have clients tracking it for global privacy laws, for example. One of the things that we've updated the product since we talked to you guys is releasing all global regions. So you can now do a full global survey, for example.
Nice.
Yeah. And we've also drilled down into some other areas. Like we now have a map if you need to map differences around federal district courts, or if you need to do just Latin American countries and you want to show some differences between any laws or regulations in Latin American countries. And we also have some really awesome stuff coming out soon where we are piping in directly into some data sources from some of the big publishers so that you'll be able to have that data be automatically updated as well. Our whole goal is, you know, our big thing is that we want to make legal technology look less shitty and allow clients and lawyers to be able to consume legal information in a way that people actually consume information logically. And so that's what Map Engine does, right? We're putting it in a format that people can actually digest.
Now you've mentioned before that you think that your customers, probably the industry as a whole, became a lot more sophisticated when it came to user design, user experience, and the interface itself. And I think we found that through the COVID period. Do you find that that's still true? Are you finding that your customers are becoming a lot more savvy when it comes to the user interface?
It gets more true all the time. I have a whole deck of the hilarious things that we heard from clients when we first started. And we've been building products for nearly a decade now. And when we first started, we were hearing we would do an accordion menu, which is the very simple, there's a carrot and you click the carrot and expands. And we were hearing things like, oh my God, you guys are geniuses about super, super simple UX things. But now clients, they at least know words. They can put words to the things that they're seeing. And they know to ask for better design. They can identify better design. And they know that they have to pay for it now. They know that it's an imperative, and we work across the sector. So our clients are not just law firms, but we also work with legal tech companies. So for legal tech companies, it's become a business imperative. You cannot put out products with a shitty design and expect to get any market traction. It just doesn't work. And that's happened literally last 3-4 years. It's become an imperative in the very short term. But for law firms, I think the recognition has become, again, really in the last 3 or 4 years, it used to be if we're creating products for our clients, they're going to think, oh, cool, our firms are innovative. And now it's really shifted a bit to be, well, okay, now we actually have to build products that the clients actually need or want. And then also, if we're giving such care to all of our other web assets, like our website, we're paying millions of dollars for branding and website, maybe the digital products we're giving our clients should also reflect our brand a little bit better and not just be something that we're kind of just plopping out and getting out there. So I think there's a recognition that this is important, yeah, and that's new. And then a recognition it makes sense to spend money on it. And that's also new.
It's interesting that you said the customers, the clients now basically have the vocabulary that they can use, that you guys can, I guess, talk the same language.
That's got to be helpful.
And I imagine that helps you, making sure that you're not just throwing out something because you think it is interesting, but you're working on something because you've both come to that agreement and understand what the end product is supposed to be looking like.
Yeah, and I think we've kind of taken it on ourselves as an organization to educate the market. And I think that's been a big part of how we've seen our role. I think we have been the ones sort of banging the drum around better design and legal. And I think we've played at least some part in sort of making that language more commonplace. And it definitely helps us, for sure. We still have challenges sometimes with clients sort of trusting us and trusting that our judgment, because lawyers always know what's best. But I think, of course, clients that come to us tend to be self-selecting, right? They know what T&P design looks like. They know our sort of vibe. They know what they're getting when they come to us. And so they tend to trust us, and they tend to want the type of things that we produce.
Yeah, I think it's good that you've sort of taken on that role of educating, and the fact that people are starting to understand the language across the board a little more, because people get really wound up about design. They can get really, really just wound up and unable to sort of move on sort of how they want something to look. So I think that's a good thing. So it wouldn't be a podcast in March 2023 without talking about large language and generative language models that are exploding onto the scene recently. There's been a lot of discussion about direct-to-consumer tools and for A to J. Some of this is good, some of it's not so good. We can think back to Do Not Pay and all of the issues that happened with that, and, the discussion and criticism about how it's not really faster or better than people using more traditional tools. As a thought leader, what do you think about these sorts of tools? What future do they have? And, how do we introduce them responsibly? Take a breath, because it's a giant question.
The Do Not Pay situation infuriates me. So in addition to working with large law firms and legal tech companies, the third bucket that we work in is justice technology. So we build a lot of consumer-facing products for nonprofits. If you go to our site, our portfolio is 90% that, because we can't usually share our law firm work or our the work we do with legal tech companies. And we care a lot about that work. And, I think that the responsibility that we have in this space, when you hear the term MVP, minimal viable product, our responsibility and the goalpost for what is minimally viable is so much further down the pike than if you're creating a social media app. You have to make sure that you are not putting somebody in a more challenging position than they were when they started, right? And I think that from the very beginning of Do Not Pay, that is not something that the founder has given a shit about. He has put people in a position where they will create complaints that if they filed, it would get them out of a class action without adequately advising people of that fact. And this has been sort of a feature of this product and this company from the very beginning. So this is not surprising to me. you know, I think that sort of the gimmicky part of this, I think this whole thing with all the things Do Not Pay was doing is intended to be a gimmick, and I don't think it would ever actually have moved forward. So I'm not actually concerned about anybody using large language models and ChatGPT in a consumer-facing product at this point. If they did, it would be highly irresponsible. I don't think that technology is anywhere close to being used in a consumer-facing legal space. I mean, Case Texas released this week, I think, is the best example of the best highly responsible use of this technology. And I think that was kind of what I was hoping to see. You know, when it first came out, I think in December, we were all talking about it at a conference in Miami. And the first thing I was saying was, I think that there's going to be some like big commercial flops that are going to set this back. And I think, you know, to the extent that Do Not Pay, like that sort of controversy, you know, we call it a commercial flop because they rushed too far into it. But I think we've seen it sort of be like a pendant to a lot of other products, legal tech products, sort of just to get it on there and to be able to say they're doing it. It's so foolish to me. Like, I don't think it's not solving a problem. It's just adding technology without putting enough guardrails on it. And I just, technology for the sake of technology is one of my pet peeves. Our company is a design first company, right? We're not engineering led. So I can frankly give a shit about the technology. Like, what problem are we solving? What's the best way for us to solve it? If technology allows us new ways to think about how we can solve the problems, then I think that's great. And that's what ChatGPT does. It opens our minds to some other opportunities to solve the problems in new ways. But I think that if it can cause more harm than good, then I don't even know why we're talking about it.
And yet, you know, we also have firms that are sort of wading into those waters as well, that we've seen in the news. And again, you know, the question is, it's like, is it ready? You know, is it ready to do that?
Yeah, and amazing tech. And I think there are ways to do this with appropriate guardrails, as Case Texas has shown. And I mean, everything Case Hex does is brilliant. Yeah. And, you know, they do it responsibly. And I think that that's the model, right? If other companies follow that model, then we're going to be, you know, it's going to be amazing to watch what happens.
Yeah.
But I think there will be some commercial flops because people will do it irresponsibly.
Yeah. Case Dex is one that usually does something so well that everyone copies them. So.
Yep. Yeah.
True.
I mean, thank goodness, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. I want to learn a little bit about your new venture, the TNP Studios. I think you've answered this before, but kind of remind me, what is the idea behind Theory and Principle as being the name that's out front of everybody? And why did you decide that now's the time to start another venture?
Because you don't have enough to do.
Yeah.
I don't love my family. I want to spend less time with them.
One way to do it.
Oh, no way. I swear, I love them. They're wonderful.
And then you just tell them, I'm doing this for you. Now,
that's
now
right.
Go back to
yes,
your room.
Yes, guys. Yeah. Do you want to go to college or not?
Yeah. Don't ask him that question.
Yeah, don't ask him that question. I will tell you. Don't ask them that question.
They will not answer it the way you want.
It's not a choice, kids. Not a choice.
I'll just point to my son's fancy sneaker collection and focus on that more than college. So Theory and Principle, the impetus behind the name is, you know, we believe strongly in sort of design theory and that, you know, everything we do, we're not just sort of throwing things that look pretty onto a page, right? Everything we do is based in design theory. And everything we do, you know, as a company, we truly believe and are sort of bound to this principle that design can help to improve the legal experience for all. And so I think it's just sort of to always keep us guided in those things that we are design focused, and we do believe that design can solve all of these, not all of the problems, but a lot of the problems and a lot of the low-hanging issues that are the ones that excite us, honestly. Like, I love solving even like the small problems, because I think we're all trying to tackle all these big, huge problems, but there's so many small problems that just a little bit of change in approach and design can make it 1,000 times better for everybody. TNP Studios is a new business arm for us that came about because we, as an organization, you know, the thing that we do extremely well is build digital products legal. That we have had our hand in more legal tech products than any company on the planet, probably nearing 100 at this point. And we recognize that there's a lot of organizations, individuals, law firms, or individual people, or small businesses who have ideas for products, but for whatever reason, can't get into market. And we want to see good ideas get to market. So this allows us, this new business line allows us to partner with them to get things to market that should be in the market and bring that skill that we have, which is building, designing, building, launching products to people who need that. TFP Studios focuses on bringing market-ready products, SaaS products to market. So we partner with people in unique arrangements. So for example, the first product for TFP Studio was Math Engine. That was a partnership that we had with Sente Advisors. They were hearing from their clients that they needed a product like this. It wasn't on the market. Sente Advisors wanted to work on this product, but they didn't have any product experience. They came to us, we collaborated on it, we launched it. And so that was sort of the first sort of anchor product. The second anchor product is we built in collaboration with Simpson Thacher. Simpson Thacher's pro bono team had a product that they wanted to exist in the market, but they actually wanted like no ownership of this, right? Like a lot of law firms, like there are solutions they wish existed, but they don't want any of the carrying costs, any of the long-term burden of owning software. And so we collaborated with them. We co-developed it months and months with their team. They were amazing. We brought it to market. They now have their version of it, like a white labeled special version for them that they now own. Now we're also bringing that product to market so we can sell it to other firms and other law school clinics and legal aid organizations. So since launching the studio, we've heard from other firms that have like essentially want the 650 model, but don't want to build it. Like, they don't want like that upfront capital expense, but they've got all these ideas. They want a product team who knows what they're doing to partner with and do like a rev share model, or they want somebody to go out and they have an idea. They want somebody to go out and say like, find out like, is this actually something the market is interested in? And then collaborate with them on the build and in sort of rev share model.
So you kind of led into the next question and you kind of hinted at the virtual law clinic. And I saw that there's I was looking on Twitter today and there's you have a big long tweet about it and you know what it's doing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the virtual law clinic?
Yeah, absolutely. So virtual law clinic is a pro bono platform that its purpose is twofold primarily: to ease the administration of pro bono, the part of the pro bono coordinators and the admin. The other part is to allow for easier provision of pro bono legal services to encourage more pro bono work. The lawyers have a platform where they can go on and they can easily see all the information, of course, about the matter, but then they also, depending on the matter type, will have all of the training materials they need right there. They'll have the forms that they need to fill out for that type of matter. They'll be able to text the client directly through that platform. One of the big issues with pro bono is lawyers use their own cell phone to text the client. They'll be able to ask questions of the supervising attorneys because, you know, pro bono lawyers are typically not working in an area that is like their area of specialization. Another unique thing in pro bono is it's oftentimes law firm lawyers partnering with corporate clients, so they can collaborate in this space as well. They can collaborate on documents and forms that they need to fill out for that client. They can report issues to the admin, and then the admins can create those training materials in there that are specific to the matter types. They can also like really specifically track outcomes, and they can set what those outcomes are. So like for an eviction matter, they can choose to track like, we kept this person in their home. Like, was this person kept in their home? Or like, did this person have to leave, but we got them an extra 30 days? Like, they can really get granular on the types of outcomes they're getting, which is really important in pro bono for various types of reporting and just to know what impact you're actually having. So it sort of eases administration and sort of managing the cases and assigning the cases to the volunteer attorneys. But then for the lawyers, it also encourages more pro bono because it makes it a lot easier for them to provide those pro bono legal services.
With some of the low and no code options out there and the Microsoft suite offering more tools like Power Automate, and more firms investing in collaborative and intelligence systems, and of course now generative language models, it seems firms have more ability than ever to do things in-house. Yet there's a market to help with development projects. Why?
Yeah, so honestly, when a firm calls and they want to work on a product together, one of the first things I ask is, you know, are there any off-the-shelf tools that can do this for you? Because we don't want to work on products that can be made using off-the-shelf tools. And we usually can recognize when it's something that can be done with an off-the-shelf tool, and we'll point that out and we'll tell them to go explore that first, because we don't want to be working on those products, right? We want everybody to walk away feeling like there's a lot of value. So typically, if somebody comes to us and there's like an internal workflow type tool they want to make, we're usually like, I think you can probably handle that.
So maybe you should look at this.
Yeah. But if it is a market solution, if it is a product that they want to turn into a scalable SaaS solution, that's a really good time to build custom, right? I think you can prototype it with an off-the-shelf solution. You can go out and test the market with an off-the-shelf solution. But if you want to bring it to market and scale it, that's really when you need a custom solution. So that's when they come to us. And a lot of firms will have some pieces of what they need to build a software solution, but usually they don't have the full team. And they don't have the full team that's really focused on building a saleable product, right? They'll have people and bits and pieces of people who can do some parts of these things. But if it's a product that really needs to be successful, that's when they'll come to us, because that's what we do, right? I think that's the big difference is when they're looking to make a scalable, financially successful SaaS solution. And a lot of firms just, you know, if that's not what they're looking for, but they still need a custom solution, a lot of firms still do not have internal design dev support. A lot of firms, even the big firms, will have dev support, but no design. That's super common. And we help a lot. A lot of our clients come to us just for design only, and then they'll pass it to their internal dev team. That's very common.
So, Nicole, now's the time where we ask all of our guests our crystal ball questions. So I want you to pull out your crystal ball, peer into the future for us, and think about some things that you see on the horizon that are going to be changes or challenges or opportunities that brings firms in to engage with partners like yourself. What do you see in your crystal ball?
My crystal balls are never very exciting, guys.
All right. Well, then in that case, just make
sure. And the reason my crystal balls. but the reason my crystal balls aren't exciting is because it's not the category of like new flashy tech coming down the pike that I think are the things that excite me or that I see that are going to be big and useful. In the end, law firms are house tremendous amounts of knowledge. And that knowledge needs to be wrapped and shared. And design has the ability to find countless ways to share that with the people who need it. And I think that for us, the excitement is around like, what are all the different ways we can do that? What are all the ways that we can find to get information out of the heads of the really smart people at law firms and into the heads of the people who need that information in the most digestible way possible? In the end, that's like 99% of what we do. You know, all of the software that we build for firms ends up being like different ways to gather information from one party and deliver it to another party. Like when you break it down like that, it doesn't sound super sexy, but it is. I mean, that is in effect like what a lot of the tech that we build is. And, you know, we don't typically work on like heavy CLM systems in-house. You know, we've done redesigns for our clients of CLM systems, but that's not really what we tend to work on for law firms. We're tending to work on different ways for them to communicate and collaborate with their clients. And I think there's a massive universe of possibilities in the way we can do that. And I find that very exciting.
I think that's great. And that's a great way to end the podcast. So Nicole Braddock, thank you.
Wait, give her a chance to make some stuff up now.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. And then there's also laser beam.
Oh, yeah.
And
on sharks.
Yeah.
So laser beams on sharks. Sharks.
Sharks. And I think that's going to be really important for everyone.
Well, that is actually a better way to end the podcast.
That is a better way to do it. That's how we should end every podcast.
It's true. It's true.
Tell us what you think will happen and then what do you.
And then make
tell
something.
Tell us some
up.
Stuff you want to make something.
Something rando. So, Nicole Braddock, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to thank our audience for taking the time to listen to the Geek & Review podcast. If you enjoy the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I can be found at GayBauerM on Twitter.
And I can be reached at Glambert on Twitter. I like how Marlene goes back into her radio voice when we do the outro. So, and Nicole, what about you? Where could one find you on social media?
I can be found at Nicole Braddock on Twitter.
Very nice. Or you can leave us a voicemail on our Geek and Review hotline at 713-487-7821.
You guys really have a hotline?
We do have a hotline. Call it.
We do.
Please.
Yeah. No one has called lately, so
just call it to say hello.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, make sure it's still working.
I'm going to spam you guys.
You could give us crank calls. And I do have to note, as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. Marlene, Nicole, we'll see you later.
All right. Ciao.